ました。エリシアキャンチ。
Hi, I'm Neil and welcome to the Crosscast. It has been a long time and we have missed you. Just think, last time we were reviewing round one of the UK National Trophy and we were looking forward to the rest of the domestic national scene. And last weekend it should have been round five. Yes, round five of the trophy. Now, we all know what has happened in 2020 and it has been a tough ride for all of us. To be honest, there have been periods when the pressure has been really high and it's been hard to get a grip as we face the ups and downs of the year. Now, I hope you like my CX metaphor there for 2020, but seriously, we do know that so many in our cyclocross community who have been just directly affected by COVID, and our thoughts are with you and your families, and it's affected us as well on the Crosscast. So, and hopefully next year is going to be a lot better. However, moving on, in today's show, we are going to review the season so far, including my trip to the World Cup in Tabor, the goings on the continent and the key series. And we might even mention moments such as when Tom Pidcock won his first elite CX race on the continent. And we're going to look forward to the Namur World Cup in the Lasta Ronde. And we're going to look forward to, well, what's remaining of the cursed period, that Christmas series of races. And if that's not all, we're also going to dive into the pits with Amira Mella. As always, I'm joined in the studio by Matt Payne. Matt, have you managed to get on the mic very much for any racing since the last show?
Well, in a word, real life, no. Virtually, yes, loads. So definitely been a busy time with Zwift and the virtual ride that isn't a race but always ends up turning into one, which is the Donny Chain Gang. And it's been great, actually. I think I've seen more of Neil and Bruce in action on the Donny Chain Gang on Zwift than we have in real life over the course of the entire year, pretty much. But it has been really busy, and it's great to try and keep the voice in check and keep the skills there in spotting riders, even if they aren't real. But it's been great to see you on there, Neil, and you've been to more real racing than I have.
Yeah, I've done two real races myself, not for a while. And I actually went over to Tabor, which was the most logistically complicated thing I think I've ever done in my whole life. So, however, it was a really great experience. I was over there with the GB team. Lotta, my daughter, was racing for GB in, I mean, it really was a dream come true on this. You know, someone, you know, she's been building up for her whole life on the cross circuit and always wanted to race as a junior in a World Cup, and to actually get to race for GB as a junior in the first ever junior World Cup, I mean, it was absolutely fabulous. So, I mean, what a way to represent GB for the first time.
And what a great occasion to have a very first women's junior. I mean, I know we should have had it a long time ago, and I totally agree with that. And I know we've all on the Crosscast worked really hard to make it happen. But at least it did happen, because we've seen subsequently, in fact, we've gone and lost all the under-23 and the junior racing off the World Cup programme as things have been condensed down. So we did at least get one race in, and we've made that first step. And I think that's really important. And I know we don't usually necessarily cover the juniors, but it was good racing, wasn't it, Neil? From what I've heard talking to people, everybody said that it was a really good race.
There were two ends of the race that you watched. You know, of course, I was in the pits for this, so I was looking at the middle and the back end of the race, which I'll come to in a moment. But on the front of the race was Zoe Backstead. Yeah, I mean, we've seen her so many times. She's obviously got that racing pedigree, but you know, you can't take anything away from Zoe. Absolute class rider, riding incredibly well, really measured, calm, taking bikes, you know, for small tweaks. Really quality ride from a quality rider. And she's someone who is able to race a race with strategy, which I think a lot of juniors aren't able to do. You know, normally that develops later on. And so for her to be able to wait until she makes her move and then go. And yeah, it was a classy ride there, but close racing all the way through. There was a crash at the back of the field on the... It's a scary bit. I'm always nervous of it whenever I watch De Boer as they come around that corner at, you know, ridiculously high speeds off the start. And there was a coming together of some riders, which unfortunately Lotta managed to put a hole in her brand new GB skin suit within like 600 metres of racing in it. And then it was one of those situations. Yeah, I know other riders this has happened to as well. You know, it's that first race and then you come round and something's gone wrong off the start and you're fighting back even for the rest of the race. However, that's racing. We know that. And there'll be other days when it isn't a chase back and burning all your matches off the first two laps to try to catch the riders ahead who have been off in the distance. Yeah, as a race, the whole event, it was really different to normal World Cup. Maybe we'll talk about that a bit more later on. Now, normally at this point we introduce Bruce or special guests, and this time unfortunately Bruce has been unable to join us. When there's work around, you have to do it in these days. So we got a little message from Bruce.
Hello guys, I'm really sorry I can't be there. Got some really interesting projects on at the moment, which hopefully we'll share more with Crosscast soon. I even have managed to do a bike race in the timings that we've had between the last recording. I'll speak to you all soon. Take care.
It's good to hear from Bruce. Bruce is one of those people who can't say no. He's so stunned with work, I know he is, and got to say congratulations to him and the guys at Four Seasons who are absolutely manic. And it really does contrast the bike business, which is busy, and bike events, which are quiet. But we have had some racing, we've had some great racing, and I certainly enjoy watching the racing. The coverage, I think, is again superb, and at least with the elite races still being covered and still being funded and actually being run, the majority of these races have been actually really interesting, and there's been some great racing in there. I think if we were to cover it all, we would be absolutely flat out and you probably have the world's longest show. But there have been some moments, haven't there, Neil? What is there for you? Standout moments, things that have changed, maybe the status quo?
Well, there's been some really... I think, as you say, the race has been brilliant, actually, this year in the men's field and the women's field. We've seen people coming back. You know, I think you could say people like Lars van der Haar. He's had some seasons where he's been a bit further back, and this year he's looking really sprightly. And then you've got people like, I suppose, Tom Moosen, who I'd kind of almost put in a similar type of vintage almost. Not exactly, but who... I was hoping we'd be doing better, and he's rarely in the shop this year. And so we've seen kind of those happening. I mean, I think the women's racing and the men's racing have both been really interesting to watch, really good to watch, and all the way through and all the way to the end. You know, many of these races, you've not known what's going to happen. But there have been some interesting incidents, especially when we're getting into the more muddy season. I mean, you know, think going back a few weeks, actually, now, there was that Merckx Plus race. There was that drop in, which gradually, as the day went on, it got more and more sketchy. And a lot of people were crashing on that. Really tricky one.
It was. And I thought it was really good to see Michael Van Toren out coming up to the top step. I mean, we looked at him for years and we thought, oh, he's got the class, he's got the speed, he goes quick. And it was a tough day out at the office for everybody. I thought it was very interesting to see Colin van Kessel. He's consistently now moved up a step. And the early season races, he was getting better and better and better. And the best Netherlands rider, I mean, he was in front of Lars van der Haar at that point in the race. And I think when it's technical, it does show a different type of rider, for sure.
Yeah, it does. And... And it also shows where, if you can be in the right place at the right time, how you can get that advantage. There's that strategic thing. You know, if you burn your matches really early, that if you can come into one of those technical sections off the start, and especially for races like that where they are much more they have those really narrow sections, and although technically they'll be close to the rules or supposedly within them, there is only one line. There's no way if someone slips off in front of you, that is a big gap. And yep, we saw that in the women's race.
I thought it was interesting that we've seen Lucinda Brand up at the front at the end of that race, and we know she's got the power. She's not always been the most technical of riders, and yet she seemed to handle that reasonably comfortably. It seems she's got so much pace at the moment that she's winning on most courses. I thought Anna Kay put in a really good ride there, 8th place in that race, and Anna is showing her mountain bike skills pretty much all the way through. She's showing that when she comes in a corner, she makes 2 or 3 places every time. It's very rare on a corner as she comes in a group, she doesn't make some space and get in the inside, get up the inside. Then when it's techie again, she's riding on things that a lot of the other riders aren't riding. Magali Rochette, again, showing good mountain bike skills to come through in what was 11th place there.
So some of the other things which we've seen this season, again, it's just one of those things that I realised when I went over to Tabor. I've not actually done a bike change in anger in a race since January.
Were you feeling a bit rusty, dear?
Well, I didn't do one in Tabor either, because it was. Yeah. So I still haven't done one, and I think we're going to be a whole 2 years probably between doing one and the next. Maybe Lucinda Brand's team could do with thinking about how to do bike changes after that incident that happened at Bome. Lucinda Brand is obviously the rider who we know and name and can see what happened there. But effectively what happened is she was used to having two people in the pit, as you would normally have at that level, someone to catch and someone to give the next bike. And she came into the pits and went to do her normal dismount and catch the next bike. But the person catching the bike, they simply weren't there. So there was no one to catch the bike. And so she let go. We can argue about what you should have done in that situation. I'm sure we will. And then took the next bike. And that the bike she had released fell. And it fell right in front of Salim Del Carmen Alvarado, who she was racing. It really held her up. Brand sensibly sat up and made it quite obvious that she'd done that. And waited for Salim to catch, and then they carried on in the same position that they were before. So that's kind of my take on what I saw happen. Matt, what did you see?
Well, I wouldn't disagree too much with what I saw. I think for me there were some real interesting points in there. One, Brand sportsmanship stroke the confidence that you've got to have in your abilities to wait. Because we talk about in cross, it's about teamwork, it's about having good exchanges. She waited. But remember, this is Lucinda Brand, who has also lost races and been put out of the running with bad bike changes before now. So she's been on the flip side of that. And I think that showed. And she won me as a fan by waiting there, definitely. Alvarado should have almost anticipated that. She's coming in. She can see there's one pit helper there. And I think that was a bit of an experience there to then get caught out by somebody else being in the pit. You know it's going to be bad. And it's not like it was the first time or the only race where there have been queues for the jet washes. Normally, the continental scene is held up as the paragon of the ultimate pit setup with race organisation jet washes and bays, dedicated bays, big pit crews, and of course lots of bikes. Now that doesn't work when we hit COVID and we've got restrictions on space, restrictions on supporters and pit crew. And we've seen the queues at World Cups even, where there are queues of 20, 30 helpers with bikes waiting to get onto 4 or 5 jet wash bays. And because of that, we've seen single person bike changes. Now often in the more grassroots racing, that's not a problem. I'm sure Neil's practiced it many times, holding one bike between his legs behind him to catch the other one facing the rider. So you literally stand facing the oncoming rider, arms out ready to catch the bike with your second bike behind you tucked in between your legs so that the rider can grab it and disappear off. or you're holding the bike with one hand and you're trying to catch with the other hand, which is a juggle. But all those things.
Or you help, or you ask your mates to help. You know, you are with them. You know, twice a week in the pits, and you get assistance.
But you can't share. Certainly in the UK, you can't share equipment, so you shouldn't, in theory, be touching anybody else's kit or equipment. So that could be why they're getting less help, or it could just be because they've got their Billy No Mates down in the pit. But I think it showed a lack of practice. It showed a lack of familiarity. And interestingly, we've not seen that same issue, even when we've seen some of the bikes ejected. Now, I know Lee Shunburn's probably going apoplectic at the crosscast at the moment. Lee is a newly qualified, congratulations, Lee, UCI commissaire who's been in charge of a number of races now on the continent. I think he's going to be going, well, you shouldn't throw your bike, it should be disqualified. But this is real world, this is really tough conditions, and it's in the heat at the moment. And I think there was no advantage gained in the end because of Brand's action. And in fact, Brand's bike was the one that got run over, so she probably was at a disadvantage.
Yeah, and Lee, I look forward to seeing your comments on the Facebook page. I'm sure they'll be here.
If you ride cross, you're used to terrain, mud, riders. You're used to tape. We've seen courses which have changed in the course of the duration of the race, from being bone dry to muddy to claggy to snowing. That's part of it, and part of it is dealing with other riders and their crew. And I think some of our younger ones, I think it's a really good point. It's getting out there and being used to things changing is a really important thing to get used to, for sure, for sure. So, and knowing what to happen when it all goes wrong.
Yeah. And sometimes it does go wrong. You know, if you're sailing, you have a bike thrown in front of you or dropped in front of you on the 6th of December, and then on the Sunday, and then the following Saturday, you're racing Shelder Cross. And then what was initially appeared to be like a broken spoke or in her cassette, it turns out it was just a bit of wire on the course. I mean, I think normally when we watch these for the TV, all of the grimness of where the races are held is hidden by the spectators. But that one, it was very clear exactly what it was like. And apart from looking at one of my favourite pieces of architecture that you see in the background of any of the courses in the Antwerp Harbour, but you apart from that, you get to see how grim actually the ground is at these. And Alvarado managed to somehow get a piece of, it looked like 3 or 4 millimeter wire wrapped in her cassette. And to begin with, you think, oh, come on, get your chain on, you should be able to do that. And then gradually you think, oh, maybe not, that looks difficult. And then when you saw photos afterwards, I think, okay, apologies for that thought process I went through yesterday. That is an absolute horrific thing. Yeah, it's like when you get tape around your wheel, which I'm sure has happened to most of us. Someone puts tape into you, but it was worse than that because it was wire.
Yeah, and it happens at the most inopportune times. I mean, you only need to ask Paul Oldham. I remember commentating for TV on the Derby National Cyclocross Championships when they were at Derby, and Paul was in the race to the finish, and he was battling it out for first place, and he went through the tapes, it wrapped round, he then rode off, it stayed wrapped round, he couldn't get it out, he had to stop, he lost so much time. But it was when he was under pressure, and for me, it can happen, it is cross. And again, I don't know whether it's inexperience from sailing, that it doesn't work in that gear, you put it in something else, you make it work somehow, or you just keep on going. But it's the heat at the moment, and when you're in competition, that's when things go wrong and you don't deal with them how you would expect to. And it wasn't her day, it wasn't her weekend, but
well, let's just hit straight to it. Hervera, Super Prestige, and it was Tom Pidcock's day.
We can stop the show there. I thought they were both classic races. And that period in the running where we saw the return of Matthew van der Poel, we've seen the return of Pidcock, we've seen them coming back and racing, I thought was going to be a case that we were going to see Wout van Aert turn up, Matthew van der Poel, maybe to Pidcock, and then we'd see people riding away. And actually, we've not. We've got this transitional period still where they're settling in, and there's a real battle. And yet we've still got the riders who've been around, people like Tuneurs, interjecting into there. And I thought, I mean, and let's focus on Pickock's win in a minute, that Tunes really tried to take it on. And I was really pleased watching it to see that fight out at the front, not just being a Pickock and Van der Poel battle, but Etz in there for as long as he was, until he finally went pop and the wheels well and truly fell off his wagon when he got distance. But Van der Poel, for me, looked like he was not having a good day at the office. He put in a few digs, he couldn't break him, and then Tom was different planet. He was absolutely formidable, and I love that constant attacking. You can see in Tom's body language, and you can see in Tom's face, and you can see it just in the angle of his shoulders and his arms when he's having a good day. That's where you look. You don't need to look at his legs. Look at his arms, look at his shoulders. That's when he's on a good day. It's flowing, it's fluid, he's like a surfer on a good day on a wave. He's absolutely superb. And he was all of that again and again and again. And we've seen it not pay off. We've seen him blow chunks and go backwards. We've seen him not able to make it stick. This time, no problems at all. He was, I think he probably could have gone two or three more times.
It was one of those rider race conditions. Everything seemed to come together for him. He looked like he was, he was like surfing. He looked like he was, I was thinking the same. It's like he had such good flow. It was like he was on a different course to everybody else. He was able to do stuff and just really looking really comfortable. It really reminded me of when he was racing at Bradford. When a lot of us saw him when he had his real standout, just everyone else riding one section or various sections of the course at one pace, and then you think that's the limit, and then Tom comes around just mucking about, just enjoying himself, doing that a bit like what you saw him do at the World Champs on the mountain bike. Absolutely flying. Incredible. I don't think we can write off Matthew Van der Poel quite yet for the rest of the season. If we look at what happened last year, I noticed, actually, I think that the race this year was like the 13th of December. I think last year it was the 14th of December at Ronsa when Matthew finished third, and that was his only race that he didn't win. And the year before, when there was the race that he had an off day on. So it's not the first time he's had an off day. They don't happen very often.
No,
so I would say we can expect a bounce back.
Yeah. The man's a champion, and he's a worthy champion. And absolutely flying. Absolutely flying. I mean, we know he's got the skills, we know he's got the engine, we know he can sprint. In fact, there's not much he can't do. But he does take some time to transition, and that's when you've got to get in there and really hammer in and get the result when it counts. And that was when he had to do it. He has to do this transition, and then you've got to get in there. And Tom was a little bit in front. He's a little bit in front of him. He's jumping into the cross. He's got a little more, I think. He's a little quicker to transition generally. And you see him do that. And for such a young rider, that moment on the podium, breakthrough moment, he's probably unkind to his races so far, because for me, he's always been class, but he's always going to remember that first win. And it's been coming, and it's been expected by so many. And it's got to be good for the sport, because seeing such a young rider who's so charismatic taking the win.
Yeah, and it's a funny thing, because you think, well, surely Tom's been around for ages. He's won loads of stuff, but actually it was at under 23. I think the only elite races he's won have been the UK national champs. Which I would, with all due respect, I think that isn't quite the same level as what you get at the front of a super prestige. But I hope we can see more races, not only, of course, with Tom winning. I think it would have been a brilliant race if any of the first three had won it, actually. I hope that we can see some more cracking racing like that. Another rider who I think has been a real rising star this year has been Clara Honsinger. I think she has also had similar types of breakthrough rights, probably also at Hevera, where she finished fourth, working her way up through the field. You know, a young rider. She's, what, she 23, I think? You know, she's been working her way up. She had a great race at Boehm, and then moving up at Hevera. Someone who now, I think we could see, maybe she's going to be in the shout for a podium. If things go well for her on a day, maybe she could be in a shout for a podium at the World Cup coming up this weekend. You know, where the courses are suiting her, she's doing incredibly well. And I know Katie had some bad luck at the very start of the season, but Katie Compton seems to be very much the number two US rider for the first time I can remember.
We've got to remember that Katie's, you know, not 23 anymore and has had a phenomenal career. And to be honest, if she'd have got bored racing a decade ago, she still have had an awesome career.
Yeah, and, <that's true. laughs>
you know, she has got nothing left to prove. And I wouldn't write her off at any point because she's a phenomenally talented athlete. But Clara Hunsinger, definitely a rider who is on the way up. She has to make it stick, though, because we've all seen riders come through, do one good ride or two good rides, and that doesn't make it. What they've got to do is they've got to make it stick. And now what she needs to do is consolidate that and continue onwards. And like you say, now we're coming into something like Namur. That's where we want to see it sticking right the way through the really busy period over Christmas. That would then establish her with more appearances, more experience, and that is going to be something to build on. But yeah, thought it was a really good ride, really, really good to watch. Again, Lucinda Brand. I mean, what can we say? She is the rider to beat this year. She's in a position, for me, where she is the rider to beat. You know, you look at Sana, she's down in sixth place. Alvarado coming in third place in that race. You know, nowhere near attacking the front, and Hunsinger was right up there.
But Sana, you know, the many times, well, when she finally broke the curse of not winning the rainbow jersey, but the many times that she then did win it, she was always around this type of place. You know, in the, it's somewhere in the mid top 10. I wouldn't write her off for the, for coming good at the end of January. She knows how to peak for Worlds, like many of her compatriots likes to race in Belgium. You know, they do prefer to race at home, it seems. An interesting. I think that she's coming on. She's coming through. I think I wouldn't write Sana off yet. I think she's on the up.
I think she's on the up. But what you do have to bear in mind, you look at people who are just coming back in. Evie Richards, 14th place. She's almost first race back. She's come back after injury. And again, we know she can come out and win. She may be not consistent, but she's back at cross. She's having fun. She was, what, two places behind Anna Kay? Anna's consistently up there at the moment, but she's been racing all season. You've got Evie Richards coming straight in and hitting it hard and going straight in there. And she's coming back, and I think we're going to see a few more riders. Remember, we've got Voss coming back, and I think her first race is going to be 22nd of December. So Marion Voss coming back to race cross again, and you can't discount her. So there's a lot more people who are going to be packing out that field.
I kind of want to be able to say, oh, Marianne Voss, she's not going to be competitive. You just can't. You know, she can come back and just be right at the podium from day one. Yeah, she's amazing. I mean, another rider who I think is, I've been so impressed with this year is Puck Peters. 18 years old, bunny hopping around the courses. Someone that I've seen race several times, actually, as she's come through, but absolutely amazing rider. I think in some ways she's a little bit like Clara Hunsinger in the sense if she can keep on building on this, if she can keep going, she could be a world champion. You know, at elite level, not just she's European champion under 23s this year, but Puck Peters, I mean, she's just takes it all in her stride. It doesn't matter what the course is, she can pull off a top 10. I think she's only been outside the top 10 twice this year. It doesn't matter where it is. It can be flat, it can be hilly, muddy, dry. She's classy.
Yeah, definitely. And a massive spread of nationalities, of ages, of experience, of backgrounds in that women's field. And it does make the men's field look poor in comparison. You know, we do have up-and-coming riders, people like Ben Turner, who's putting in a good performance week after week after week. People like Thomas Mean. Mean's, for me, what a ride for Mean. I mean, you must have seen him at Tabor, where he put in a great race.
He keeps
on improving.
He was the hot favourite at that race because he won it last year. When everyone was there, it wasn't. There was a reduced field, but he. It was a cracking race, and Mean was. He had it dialed all the way through. He was riding so well, and I think he. He can bounce from that. I hope he can build on that. But Ben Turner, he was in some ways Mean was the favourite. He rode a type of race we would expect. He pulled away and he had a comfortable enough gap at the end, enough time to zip up the jersey and celebrate as he came over the line. Behind him, though, there was this group of three, and Ben Turner, who has been injured, he was out, and I'm not sure if this was his first race back, but it was one of his first races back, and was riding in a group of three, and he actually did a really good strategic sprint. It was kind of in two parts. So the first half of that sprint coming down past the pits at Tabor, where it then goes into a 180 into the second half of the sprint. And it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to overhaul someone in that second half. You really need to be ahead after that second pit. And getting that British 1-2, especially after Zoe Backstead had won already, you know, that was a quality day for the British squad.
Yeah, and they took that onwards. Turner then at Havre getting 13th, and Mean getting 9th, a top 10 on the same day that we saw Tom Peacock taking the win. And I think my favourite was, I didn't watch the race live, and the first I knew of it was actually a post from Sonia, Tom's mum, and it went along the lines of, "That's the world champion in the background, at the behind," and you just go, "That's it. That's the result." You know, I think I know the family well, and I've got to say, it's a reward to all the family, not just Tom, because they've all worked so hard to get both Tom and Joe in a position where they can be racing. It's going to be really interesting to see how that progresses now.
Yeah. But let's not take any attention away from other riders there. Toby Barnes, if you remember, he has won every top level race in the UK this year. The one race there has been at
the
Milthorpe.
And only.
Yeah. And then he travelled over to Sweden and had a good result there. And yeah. Toby had a superb ride. I think he was sixth. I'm doing that from memory rather than looking it up. And Toby Barnes in such a good field. I think that if you look at those around him, they were pro team, pro riders, rather than someone who's, you know, a student, you know, training in their spare time, effectively, you know, self-funding and asking me if I can give them a lift to the course. So we travelled together. I was pitting for Toby, actually. Thankfully, I didn't have anything to do. We've got, even if you go away from our number one, number two, our number three rider, and the other riders who we had in the whole of the squad there, they were all looking incredibly, incredibly strong. It was Tabor itself. It is an amazing place. It's probably the least. The actual venue itself is probably the least beautiful, 200 meters squared, within 100 kilometers. Yeah, because it is absolutely stunningly beautiful as a city. It's absolutely amazing. And so in the background of Tabor, where you kind of see the tower blocks and stuff, you know, that it does not reflect what it is like there. I'd highly recommend it. I've been to the Czech Republic before, and it's absolutely stunning country to visit. It's beautiful. There were some really funny things. So the atmosphere was really odd, because it did feel like more like a national trophy, because there were no crowd. no fans. And you've got everyone around, and of course you recognise everyone. And although it's not like a trophy where a lot of people know me as well. It wasn't, I knew a lot of people there, but nothing like the percentage. And so you're just walking through, and you've got world champion here warming up, and then you've got Lars van der Haar needing to push to get his motorhome out from the mud, and you've got all these different. Yeah, and it was just very much like that community thing. It was really, really different. And the funny thing there actually was the crowd noise, where the crowd noise is played through the PA system on a loop all day from all the races to give a bit of atmosphere. And they turned it up on the start and then turned it down, and then on the last lap turned it up again a little bit, and then coming into the finish the cheers go up as you go over the line. In some ways it was bizarre, but in other ways actually I think it probably did help with some of the making the atmosphere. But the course itself, it's a bore. I have to say I've been to quite a few of these courses, and most of them are, there was always some surprises there, but then most of them they're what you expect. But I must admit it was totally different to what I thought it was going to be like. Now, I've probably on the crosscast have described Tabor as being relatively flat. That is not the case. It's really draggy. You're going up and down climbs that are actually, if it was a road climb, you'd be out of the saddle, thinking about moving to your small ring. And you're doing that multiple times. And there are other sections like the section that looks like it's a cambered section. It's kind of close to the start where it's muddy, and there were people going into the into the netting on the side. If you didn't know it was that section, you'd think there was nothing to it. It's nowhere near as steep as a camber. It's almost unnoticeably steep. You wouldn't look at that and think, oh, this is going to be a tricky section. So it must be something about the conditions, the mud, the slipperiness on that section, rather than the steepness of it. So it is actually quite a different course to what it looks like on the TV, especially the elevation changes. It's a really, really tough course on the riders.
I think that for me is one of the big differences. When you go to the courses, I've been lucky enough to go for work to a lot of the courses, mountain bike, road, to the cross, and they are all the same. You have no idea, if you've just watched it on TV, how steep it is. And the best description I can give you is if you watch something like the World Mountain Bike Champs and you look at it, you think that's relatively flat. It's just a little slope. So the sort of thing, like you say, you could get up there in your biggest chainring if you're coming up the slope. You're going down it, you think it's not going to be too bad. But actually, when you stand at the bottom, you put your arm out in front of you, you'll touch the slope stood upright. It's properly 45 degrees or steeper in front of you. And that's what you're getting on the cross. These banks, you stand there and you reach out and you can touch the bank without leaning over. And that's how steep these banks are. And yet when you look at them on telly, you just don't get that indication. And you don't get a feel for the mud. You don't get a feel for the surface. And I must admit, when I go to an event, the first thing I do is I get there and I sort of, poke light, hit the floor and get my hands in there. And literally, I will touch the floor. I'll be feeling what it's like, because you can't beat that. That is the sort of stuff that you only get by having been on the course. And I think that's why it's so important to get like the junior women's race there, because these riders need to do that. They need to get the racing in. People like Barnes, people like Backstead, like Lotta, getting out there and riding. And when they get older, that'll come into good stead. That will help them out. But they've been there and they've experienced it. Hopefully not with artificial can noise, though.
No, that's right.
That's not my idea of fun.
Yeah. There were two other riders, actually, who I thought were really classy on that day. One of them, is a bit obvious. The other one may be a bit less obvious. The obvious one was Van Turenhout taking the win. He, in some ways, it's similar to Maine. He was in his element. He was just riding so classy. And his skills are incredible. He is noticeably so much better than everybody else at riding the hurdles, at bunny hopping the barriers. He's you know, even those who you would think are really clean on here, you know, every time you think, oh yeah, you made it. But he is incredibly fluent, and he had absolutely such a class ride.
Yeah, yeah. Good to see him. I thought he was classy. And I have to say, it was really good to see him up there. He's a bit in second place, close. I thought, well, Van Aert's ride, it was okay. It was a bit underwhelming. What was it like? Yeah. Did you see it in real life?
Yeah, I did. I've seen him race quite a lot of times, actually, and in some ways he always looks the same. No, he's not that. He hasn't got a lot of facial expression. He's just always just getting on with his job. Whereas this time, yeah, he looked like he was going hard early on, and then thought, okay, I then seemed to like measure a little bit. Dare I say, I think that the change of elevation might not have been helpful for him. He looked like maybe he's a few grams heavier than he was this time last year. And so there are things, details like that, that maybe he'll be working on. He was riding as skillfully as you would expect. You know, like always, you know, the people slide off and it doesn't get seen on the TV, which did happen when him and others lost the group for a while, but then they're back on again. But I don't think he was ever going to be in a better position, really. You know, I don't think anyone would have been able to take it to Van Turenhout. The other rider I thought I was actually so, so impressed with was Sveik. Not Sveik. You would have seen the often repeated crash that he had, which was just really weird. It was so strange. I don't quite know what happened there, but he went over the bars on the barriers, hurt himself, and was plumb last after that with a gap. But what he did, he didn't just hop straight on his bike. He checked himself over. He was calm. And then he got back on his bike, and I just thought he was going to roll around to the pits. You know, he didn't look like he was going particularly quickly. And then he was still riding around at the back and was still just pootling around. He looked like how I think I look when I'm like riding a training laps of a Holm-Pierpont where I do a lot of training. You know, you're kind of going hard, but it's not quite the same as in a race. And then he started to catch up the back markers, as you'd expect. And then he's looking like he's just riding around calmly. And then you see him catch up with someone like Gosse van der Meer, who many of us will know. He's the opposite of, well, in terms of his facial expressions. You can really tell what he's thinking, what he's doing. And he's riding well. He had a good race there. It's very, very quick. And you just see the difference between them. You've got one of the best riders, someone who won the national trophy in the UK last year, someone who podiumed last week, I think, was it in the Toy Toy Cup. Mm-hmm. And Sveik just rides up to the back of him and just sits there looking like he's just rolling round. And then in the last two laps, he kind of opened up a little bit. And the finish, I think it was 14th over the line. And you think for someone who was at the back, if you would have absolutely railed it and gunned it, I don't think you could have hoped to be much better than 14th at that point. Coming through,
yeah, you look at the people behind him. You've got people like David van der Poel, Steve Chanel,
yeah,
Marcel Meissen, Joshua Dubow, Tom Pidcock, who okay was just on his way back in again, but you know, look at the turnaround from there onwards. You just think, yeah, it is some ride. I mean, we all know that you're biased and you've got the bromance going there with the Mr. Sveik, but I have to agree with you. It was class and a real inspiration of where you get on, and it's valuable points. You know, he didn't give up, and in the end, he was 14th, and that's going to make a big difference come the end of the season, particularly if it gets shortened anymore. I mean, we've seen the dates change constantly, pretty much right up till now. So hopefully, it won't end up being another national trophy of one. But you know, we've got the next one coming up, and Sveik's got himself a great position on the grid because of it.
So while there's been not much racing in Central Europe, we've been seeing people taking advantage of the opportunities that there are. We see them over in Sweden, over in Czech Republic, of course. But also, we've seen riders travelling over to Slovakia. Sophie Wright, as an example, absolutely smashing it last weekend, getting a podium in Slovakia. But also Mira Mella. Now, we've seen Mira Mella come back for, well, the best start to the season that I think I've seen from Mira for a very, very long time. And she won at Milnthorpe, and she's had two elite wins so far this year. Many of us will have known Amira and seen Amira race for a few years, and Matt had a chance to catch up.
So here in an extraordinary year on the Crosscast, we're in for an In the Pits. We have a pits, and we have a very extraordinary guest, a rider who is going from strength to strength and has got one of the most extraordinary seasons, I think, and set of races. Amira Mella, welcome to the Crosscast.
Hi.
Good to see you here. Now, we're recording this on the Friday before Namur.
Yes.
And I'm in the studio back in Sheffield, which seems to be my permanent home at the moment. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Oudenaarde in Belgium. So, yeah, I've been here a week now, and then I go home after Namur.
Okay, so you've been in a week, but you've been on the continent quite a lot this season, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, racing in the UK was just... it's just changing all the time, and it's a bit more predictable out here. Like, they were pretty confident we were going to have a season out in Europe. So, yeah, I did a 5-week block earlier in the season, and then this is a short block, and then doing another block after Christmas. So that's exciting.
So lots of moving backwards and forwards. So if we rewind to the start of the summer, maybe when we thought we were going to get some kind of racing, what, in a perfect world, would you have hoped for this season had we not had a global pandemic?
I think my hope was definitely national series races. Didn't race very much last year, so this year was more about getting some races in my legs and kind of seeing where I was at again. The national series race is always good because there's a lot of points, there's a lot of competition, not that much travelling, and I really like doing national series. I like going and seeing people. So yeah, I think that was my main aim. And then whatever came with it, if I got selected for some World Cups or some championships, that would also have been good. I didn't really have set races I wanted to do just because of the pandemic. I didn't want to say I want to do stuff and then always be disappointed. So I kind of had a loose calendar that all got scrapped when the National Series got cancelled. So
we had the pandemic really hit, and I think as organisers and riders and race officials, we all sort of saw it starting to unfold. But it's not the first difficulties, is it, that you've had? I know you've been racing abroad, you've raced back in the UK, you've ridden for, you know, some really top-flight teams, you've ridden for clubs. Your career has been a little roller coaster, really, hasn't it, so far?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this today, and I was like, I think I was a really good junior. I developed quite a lot as a junior, and I got a lot of race opportunities, and made big progressions, which got me onto quite a good team. And yeah, maybe in hindsight, I was too young to make that step up to racing with Helen. I mean, it was an amazing opportunity, but looking back now, like, I'm now 23 and I'm probably only now ready to start learning the stuff that she was trying to teach when I was 19. And I've had a lot more life experience. And yeah, I mean, I went away from the sport for a year. I didn't race at all. And then I came back and maybe a bit more mature, a bit more perspective of bike racing in the real world. Like, it's such a small part of the world. Yeah, it might be a big part of my life, but when you step away from it, I think I've realised that there is the fact that I want to do, and I'm glad that I come back but also went away at the same time. A bad result doesn't mean I'm not a good person, or it sounds silly, but I think some people can get so wound up, and I used to on bad results, but in the grand scheme of things, like, it's not that big.
You become invested in it almost, don't you? And it becomes part of your personality, and your self-worth is wrapped up in the result. And realistically, there's so much out of your control, particularly in cross.
Yeah, I don't want my results to be a judgment on me. I think, there's the bike racing mirror, but there's also the Amira that wants to do other stuff in life. And yeah, like, I'm glad that I've had this roller coaster of a career so far, and I've learned everything I have, and yeah, I'm back now and better perspective of racing, basically.
And do you think that's prepared you really well, almost better, for what's happened this year, which has been a series of ups and downs, a couple of spirals, yeah, a couple of loop-the-loops on the way through?
Yeah, maybe. I think this year, like, I got a job in the summer and that kept me quite busy, and I think a lot of people over summer, maybe because they couldn't see racing happening, had no, like, aims or targets or like motivation away, but because I had a job, I had to train around my job. It gave me quite a nice structure of life. And I think that's what kept me motivated in the summer. And I'm still at uni, so my like plan was, if racing got cancelled, I'd really focus on uni. So I always had that as like in the back of my mind, that if racing did get cancelled, it wouldn't be the end of the year for me. I had something else to focus on, which I liked. So.
Yeah, it gave you an alternative target and maybe took some of the pressure off.
Yeah, it does take the pressure off, because I'm still like, oh, I've got uni still, so yeah, it's quite nice.
And whereabouts in your uni course are you? In year one, year three?
I'm in my third year, but I've split it. So I've got this year and next year. So next winter I'll still be at uni.
Right, okay, that's a really smart move, because that, I guess, gives you a little bit more time to train, to reflect, to rest, put your feet up, whatever.
Yeah.
Excellent. So we came in and we could see the National Series was looking patchy, let's say.
Yeah.
It's going to be, let's be generous, it was going to look patchy. The National Trophy Series, in its entirety, was all in Westmorland. And it was on a traditional Dave Haygarth course. Dave, of course, has been a guest on the Crosscast, and we know Dave really well. So we knew we were going to be set up for something a little bit special when we were there. But I thought it was some of the best racing I've seen, particularly in that women's race. It was, I mean, the conditions were tough, weren't they?
Yeah, they were tough. I really, really liked the course there. I think it had a bit of everything, because there were quite a lot of long stretches where it's kind of powery, and then a lot of running, but also a lot of technical mud sections. So yeah, maybe that's why the racing was so exciting, because it had a little bit of everything and a little bit for everybody in that course.
You had a real battle that race, didn't you, with Sophie Thackeray, who you've raced with for years and years and years. I mean, you know, your family's a, if I think back long enough, probably go back to something like the Rafa series at Broughton Hall, which is home of the new Northwest series. I mean, the Rafa back there, that was a long time ago. And you were racing against each other there in the Rafa series with the foam wall and everything else that was there, as well as some very serious racing. So, you know, you've raced together for a long time. Is that an advantage when you know somebody so well?
Maybe. I mean, I'm sure Sophie knows when I get tired and I can see signs in Sophie when she gets tired, which I guess is an advantage, but it works both ways at the same time. So maybe kind of like backflashes at you. Sophie, this is the best year I've ever seen Sophie ride. Like at the first national, she went out to win and she rode hard. Like after about a lap and a half, I was like, I can't go this hard the whole race. And yeah, she really put herself out there, and I think, like, it was quite brave of her. Like, first national, no one's raced each other yet. No one really knew what was going to happen, and she came in really fit, and yeah, she laid it all out there, and she made me try really hard for that win. And yeah, it's good to, it's nice that we've grown up together and now we're racing together, but it's quite a healthy competition. Like, she was really happy for me to win, and obviously she won in the 23s, which was really good, and we're quite supportive of each other now. We're a bit older, and that competitive edge is kind of knocked off, and we're more like happy for each other, which is nice.
You say that though. My favourite quote, I think, of the whole weekend was one where you were stood around and you were talking with Sophie, and you said, "You were killing me early on. You're absolutely killing me." And then you eased off a little bit, and I thought, "It's my turn to make you hurt now."
Yeah.
And I thought that sort of summed it up a little bit. It was like you were both giggling and laughing at the time.
Yeah.
But you were clearly happy to have been able to turn the tables.
Yeah, I mean, she made me suffer for the first two laps, and then I think my legs weren't going, then realised, right, this is actually race pace. And then I was like, right, I'm going to try and sit on the front and make her suffer. So yeah, it worked out quite nicely. I think it shows how good the women's field is, that like, we were both able to make each other suffer, and it was just the best on the day rather than someone outright winning. Like, if we raced again, like, well, we did race again at some of the Yorkshires, and the same happened again. Sophie made me, it made me 3/4 of the race to catch her in one of the races. So it's good competition, very healthy. So yeah. But yeah, after it, we can giggle about it. And I'm pretty open. I'll tell her she made me suffer. Like, it was pretty obvious I was suffering. So yeah, it's nice though.
You were out and racing all over the continent. How did you do it?
I mean, I'm very lucky. I have a boyfriend who came with me for the 5 weeks, which was, yeah, very good. I appreciate having someone with me, so it felt like home. We came out and I got selected for Europeans, and I wanted to do a race before Europeans. I hadn't raced in Europe in like 3 years. So we came out to Koppenberg, and then the Europeans, and there was a nice little race block the week after, which we did. And then the original plan was, I really wanted to get selected for Tabor World Cup, but that didn't work out. So then I didn't really want to go home at the same time. Like, I still wanted to race, and I knew if I went home, I wouldn't be racing. So when we were out in Belgium, I had a look at the calendar and just wanted to try and go somewhere where we've never been before. I could get some points, which I really needed this year. And just something different, really. Something that maybe most people don't look at. So we ended up going to Slovakia, which was a very long drive. But it was really good. I'm really glad we did it. I got 2 wins, which was also really nice. A lot of UCI points. So I jumped up the rankings, which is always good. And yeah, we just did something different for once. Like, the year's so up and down, and I wanted to make the most of it in a way. And if racing was out in Slovakia, then that's where we were going to go for the racing, basically.
And what was the cross like? I mean, most people won't have raced in Slovakia. What's it like?
It's a C2, so it's equivalent to a British national. So all the best girls in Slovakia were there, and they had quite a lot of Czech and Polish girls there. We were quite close together. So the field wasn't massive, but the top riders were pretty strong. It was very dry. It was very cold. It was the second day, the race was like -2 hard, basically. I was hoping for mud, but actually it was too cold for mud. And so yeah, it's quite dry. It's kind of like early season racing in the UK, like hard grass packed field, kind of. Really enjoyed it.
And what were the courses like?
First one was fast and twisty, and the second day was quite hilly. It had, yeah, you dropped all the way down the bank side, down to like a road almost, and then had to climb all the way back up.
So if you had to compare them to UK courses, the two courses,
quite
where
similar
would you say?
To UK. The same kind of layout, like quite a lot of corners, some hurdles, a lot of grass. Yeah, they were quite similar to UK, which I think why maybe going there felt quite comfortable, because I was like, oh, it's just like racing in the UK again.
And did that feeling comfortable make a big difference? Do you think that contributed to taking the wins?
I'm not sure, really. I did quite a lot of training the week before, and I kind of wanted to prove to people that I might not be getting very good results in Belgium, but if you go somewhere else in the world, like, I can still win races. I think people look at Belgian results and they really respect them in a way. And I wanted to prove that if you go somewhere else, like, the British riders are really good. It's just in Belgium, we don't look that good, in a way.
Well,
yeah, it was nice to
think
win.
They look amazing, but obviously yeah, the level of competition there, it is tough. And
yeah,
they're racing tough consistently, which I guess has a big impact, because yeah, they are able to race consistently. But they're having a tough time this year with races being cancelled. Where did you head next on your marathon trip around Europe?
Then we came home. So that was the 5 weeks over, and then we decided to come home, kind of regather, see what I wanted to do next. So I was at home 2.5 weeks, I think, before coming out on this trip.
Okay, and then you're out on this trip, and of course now back out in Belgium, come out for your next block, and we've got Namur coming up. And have you been out to the course? Have you seen what it's like?
No, so you can't pre-ride this year on Saturday, so I'm just going to go Sunday morning and ride. I did some cross-riding yesterday, down some steep drops and up, a little bit of practice, but yeah, I'm just going to go Sunday morning and pre-ride.
And that's the same for everybody, isn't it? I mean, I think people who are maybe, I'm going to use the word closeted on the World Cup circuit, they get used to being able to pre-ride it days in advance, particularly in the Belgian courses. And then when they get faced with something like a one day, it throws them. Whereas quite often in the UK, that is the norm. You can only race it or ride it on the day.
Yeah. I mean, Namur is probably the one course I'd want to pre-ride the day before, just because it's so technical and you really want to feel confident going down them drops. But yeah, like you said, it's the same for everyone. Everyone's going to turn up on Sunday morning and have to ride that course. So
it's going to be tough, isn't it? And for those people who don't know your ride so far on there, I mean, you've got a really good palmarès so far, a real good history across races. What's Namur been like for you in the past?
I normally ride quite well at Namur, just because it's so hilly and there's quite a lot of running. I think the last time I rode there, I actually punctured. I was on for a really good ride and then I rimmed my front wheel, punctured, which made me go back. But I like Namur. It's a true brutal cross course. There's no hiding. There's no going off too hard because it will catch up with you. It's just nailing them technical sections and not losing time there. I think I need to really concentrate on coming back to racing internationally, how technical the courses are compared to the UK, and how in the summer I need to do more technical training, basically.
So we do talk about this quite a lot on the Crosscast, about the level of technicality of the different courses and the different areas, and it varies whether you're in the States, in the UK, on the continent. Yeah. And the level of racing, of course, in the UK, we have the same level and same course quite often for 12-year-olds who are racing in the under-14 category.
Yeah.
Right the way through to our elite riders, so riding out on the same thing. So it's covering a lot of riders, whereas do you feel the elite courses are designed for the elites very much more so?
Yes. In Europe, you would not want to send an under-12 down the courses that I've had to ride this year. And I think that's what the UK is missing, and maybe why there's such a gap between the UK races and European races. It's just how technical the courses are. Like, one of the races I went to, I remember going around and pre-ride and feeling like I'd want to ride a mountain bike. And I don't get that sensation in the UK. That is set between UK races and European races, in my opinion.
So let's look forward.
Yes.
Namur. Have you got a target? Have you got a position in your head? Is there a little number flicking away behind those eyes of yours going, I would like to be number... What you can't see, listeners, is I'm looking at Amira here and she's staring into the middle distance across the screen going, don't ask me this, Matt. Please don't ask me.
I'd like to be top 30. It would be a big ask, but I have been getting top 30 at some of the Belgian races, and the Belgian races at the moment, to me, are basically World Cups. Like, there's no more girls that can come in. There's maybe one or two more girls that can come into that top 30 that have not been at these Belgian races, but apart from that, everyone out in Europe at the moment is staying here for all the World Cups, and it's the same girls. So I think a top 30 is possible on a good day. Like I said, the more you never know, you can punch the start is very hard and you can get pushed back. But yeah, I think I am capable of it. I just want to prove it to people.
I don't think you need to prove it to too many people. I think we all know you're more than capable of it. It's just a case of seeing what happens on the day. I've certainly seen a few pictures and it is looking really, really muddy and wet and sloppy.
Good.
And typical Namur. But, of course, once that's over, you're then coming back to the UK, are you?
Yes, I'm coming back for Christmas, and then I'm also riding I'm heading back out Boxing Day and riding the Dornemond on the 27th, the next World Cup as well. And then I've got a little race block, probably my final race block out here.
And how long is that race block going to be?
It's only a week, but there's four races in a week. It's quite intense.
Four? Are you mad?
Yeah, first and the third.
Wow. So that's a really intensive block, isn't it? That's going to really be a test about who can sustain that. And
yeah.
Do you think people are going to take some of those races off and target some, or do you have to target them to survive that many races, or do you think you can go that hard all the way through?
And I've already taken races off the calendar. So this is already a reduced race schedule in a way. Some girls may race more. It's difficult because the 27th is a World Cup, and then the last race, the third, is a World Cup. And it depends how much you want. It depends how well you want to do the World Cups. So I'm kind of targeting the Moor and the 27th, and then just going to hold on to the third and just hope. Form of legs working.
Yeah, lots of recovery and lots of rest in between, yeah. and just
lots
keeping
of sitting
it
down.
Great reason. It's not an excuse. Exactly. It's definitely a reason. I've been racing hard. I've got to sit down lots. Everybody else could do all that.
Yeah.
And what's the atmosphere like at the races so far? And you expected it to be the same? I mean, it's pretty quiet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit strange. I do miss the crowds. That's definitely one of the things that attracted me to cross when I was younger. That is definitely something I'm missing. But I'm just happy to race. Like, all the girls are happy to race. Everyone's following the rules so we can race. And yeah, I mean, hopefully crowds will be back next year and you'll get that cross atmosphere that everyone loves back. But at the moment, I think we just got to get on with it. Just be happy that we're out there racing the best girls in the world.
Do you think you're then going to have a rest or have a break before we go into whatever happens in the summer? Have you got plans for the summer?
No. I never plan my summer. I just always go with it. If I want to race, I will race, but I won't race earlier than May just because I'll have time off, and then trying to build some base back up will take that long. I mean, I'd like to do the crits if they're on this year and stuff like that. Maybe a little bit of mountain biking just because the courses are technical and I need to.
Maybe you should just take your cross bike to all the mountain bike courses.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically what it's like out here, so... Yeah, I've not really got set plans, just... I really enjoyed this summer, the freedom of training continuously and not having that broken-up training of races. So I am quite tempted just to train all summer again and maybe do the odd race just to, like, keep that top end there.
And you've been riding for Alvin, who gives you some support all season, and clearly seemed to suit you. You seem very, very happy in your racing and the setup you've got.
Yeah.
Would you consider moving back to a top flight team if you were offered that? Would you go chasing that?
That's a good question. I would. I mean, I love riding for Albion. They are so chilled, so supportive. They give me everything I need. But there will, if I keep progressing, there will be a point where the moving would be the best thing for me to do for my career, in a way. At the moment, I'm really happy with Albion. I don't know. Depends what I want to do. If I want to race more in Europe, yeah, the ideal thing would be to move for the team out here, but I'm probably not at that level yet. So at the moment, Albion's probably perfect for me. Yeah, there's always, everyone's got ambitions to move to bigger teams and more support and all that. I don't know. It's a hard question.
We did say it was going to be an easy chat, didn't we?
Yeah.
So, Amira, we've had a great race season so far. I think you've got to be pleased with that.
Yes.
What, if you had to sum up your feelings about the coming races, you've got five words.
Excited. Determined, motivated, probably tired. I'm going to be tired at the end of it. And I hope to be inspired at the end of it.
That's a good one to end with.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's been great having you down in the pits on the Crosscast. So thank you very much, Amira Mella.
Thank you for having me.
Wow, that was just an amazing interview with Amira. So thanks for that, Matt. You know, really inspiring. And I think the inspiration, I mean, she says she's looking for inspiration, but I think she can be an inspiration and is an inspiration to other riders. You know, those riders who maybe are new coming in, who maybe didn't see her win the national champs previously, maybe weren't aware of that, and have kind of had to see how you can come back. You can, you know, your career waxes, wanes, and you could come back to great form later on. Especially, you know, she's still, is she still racing under 23? But can't be far off it.
She's 23 now. I mean, you know, we think about Amira being out there racing. It's not all that long ago she was winning the title. And there's her, and there's a great picture from the Milnes race team where there's Sophie and her both in their stripy jerseys from being across in Abergavenny. And you think this rider's has so many ups and downs. And talking with Amira, that's really, really clear. But like you say, I think a great inspiration for riders out there, and particularly for riders who maybe don't have that smooth trajectory of career path where it just flows upwards. And she's had some ups and downs, and she's still out there and still enjoying the racing. It comes through. It's obvious from that infectious laugh of having enjoyed talking about it. And, you know, it is, I have to say, one of the easiest interviews I've ever recorded, because you kind of just press the play button, ask the question, say, off you go, Amira. It's great. And that's, I think it's really good to see her improving. And I hope she gets a target that she states in there of a top 30 position, which did take a bit of pushing, as you can hear in the interview, but a top 30 in Namur.
Well, Namur's coming up, so we ought to enter the Laster Ronda. So in the Laster Ronda, we always look forward to what's coming up. Now, Namur is coming up. Yeah, it's quite a difficult course, I think, is fair to say. It's terrifying is probably a good word for it. Matt, how would you describe it?
Iconic.
Iconic.
Iconic in every sense of the word. Massive, big, huge drops, as mentioned by Amira. Some like mud. You've got off-camber traverses to be all off-camber traverses ever. You've got added in a cobbled descent. We've also got in steps with a drop down over a bridge. We've got a nice tarmac straight just to have a like 2 second breather on the way through. And if that isn't enough in there, you've also now got a new descent down in the run round that we've not seen before. So there have been some big changes, but for me, iconic. It's one of my favourite races. It always sees a worthy winner. I don't think we've ever seen anyone. And you only need to think back maybe to say the Worlds that have been on there most recently, where everybody was in bits. There was nobody at the end of that race who wasn't either hypothermic, even though they were euphoric at the finish, or was pushing a bike that weighed three times that did when he started off. I mean, it gives you a bit of everything. And the conditions at the moment are looking pretty grim out there. We're recording this on the Friday, and it's due to race on Sunday. And as Amira said in the interview earlier, they can't race on it, they can't ride on it, can't practice on it on Saturday. It's only on Sunday they're going to see this course. That is going to be pretty tough stuff for them, because it is everything for me a cross course should be. And a little bit safer than last year, because last year we did see a little bit of a point where Neil, you and probably me were a little bit scathing in our comments about the drop onto the cobbled road.
Yeah, I mean, last year there was a reason. I think there had been a landslide, I think, ironically enough, which pulled out part of the normal course. So they cut in a new way down onto the cobbled road. And because of the rain that they had last time, it was all running down the hill, and it eroded this top surface, and basically you were left with effectively riding down what looked like, you know, concrete sacks, and you know, like a staircase going down. It was really horrible, and we saw so many people have offs coming down, and it was an attritional race. There's a huge squad going out from the UK it seems this year, which is good to see. So, and it is going to be pretty tough. The last World Cup we saw Thomas Main, who had he won. I hope this time he can follow up with something as good, obviously, but maybe even to get to the finish in a good shape would be an achievement. You know, I mean, Thomas, it's almost a nemesis course for him. He's had some really, you know, it's so tough. And this shows you, you've got these classy riders who will struggle on this course. It really does mix it up completely.
Yeah, it does. It's a really tough course, and it is attritional. I mean, it suits a tough rider. Hattie Harmden's had great rides on there before. We're going to see if the riders can handle the cambers, because that's actually going to be more critical than before. The descent we mentioned earlier has been replaced, and it's been replaced by a slope. It's directly below the iconic off-camber traverse. They now come back up and they drop down onto the cobbled road directly underneath it. And it's a sloping traverse into a turn that takes you back up the cobbles. And it is going to suit skilled riders, powerful riders. It is definitely going to be interesting to see how the GB squad... It is a huge GB squad out there. And we've got to have high hopes, both from people like Anna Kay and Evie Richards, who've got history with this course, from Tom Pidcock, of course, who knows this course inside out. It hasn't been his favourite course of yet. Is it going to be this time? I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. And I'm really looking forward to seeing all of the races there. Unfortunately, we don't have a junior race in there, but, you know, we are going to see the best in the world, the best elites out there. And let's hope it's safe for everybody. I mean, it is a course that's taken people out before.
Yeah. And I think with Matthew van der Poel and Tom Pidcock, no, they had that great race last week. I think they could do it again this week. Matthew, yeah, he's got a good record at Namur. He's won it several times. But Tom also has done very well there. He is clearly on form. Last year, he was riding it pretty well, and you know, he ended up finishing fourth. But yeah, had a cracking ride last year. So I think we could see some good rides coming through. But for the women, well, Brand, I find it difficult to see anyone come round Brand. She's going to be on such a high in terms of confidence, as is Tom, coming into this race. And she has also got a good record at Namur.
Another rider who seems to like it is Lars van der Haar. I think Lars could be on a good ride. It suits him, the really technical, ballsy, flat out, scary little techie bits and some of the drops downs. He always seems to suit them. Wout van Aert goes well there. But as you say, maybe that Tour de France, that multi stage physique, let's say, is not going to be suited to Namur as much now as he was in the past. In the women, I mean, I wouldn't discount Evie Richards. If she's on form and flying, she's going to absolutely blitz it. But as you say, Brand is the rider to beat. So could be interesting to see where that comes from. I wouldn't want to put money on anybody at the moment. The conditions are grim. And you can catch up if you listen to this before. You've seen the coverage and you want a little preview. Somebody we know, Matteo de Klerk, has actually got himself a cracking little video on YouTube. And have a little watch. This youngster goes out and round the course. He shows how it's done, to be honest. You don't need to worry about his dad. Not at all. Just watch Matteo go round. He's a youngster, and he's certainly shows us where the course goes, how techy it is, and just how muddy it is, and also how to ride with 1 foot out on a descent into a cobbled road. Good skills, that young man.
Yeah, he's a great lad. He put some good stuff up on Instagram as well, little Matteo. So highly recommended. I'm going to be really interested to see what happens at the front of the women's race. I think there are several people there who this could, if they get a good start, this could be a day when they could be running in podium positions. You've already mentioned Evie, and earlier we mentioned Clara Honsinger. I think this is a course that does suit her. she's also going to be bouncing on confidence. Alvarado's had bad luck with lots of things happening, so I think she may be a little bit rattled. So it might be an opportunity for others to come to the fore. I think this is one of the openings, I think, for Hunsinger this year, this race, where we could see her, if she can build on what she did last weekend, that would be absolutely amazing. What else is coming up? Not a World Cup this year, but Zolder is happening, a classic course on the motor racing circuit. It's what do we see at Zolder? Well, it, of course, it has long, long road sections interspersed by, you know, those kind of sandy woods that we are familiar with on a lot of the cross races. There are some pretty steep, sandy drop-ins and descents, and, you know, my favourite bit of Zolder, I think, is the two sets of 180s that come up across the bank. So they come in like from left to right, and then do a 180 up the bank, go across it, and there's multiple lines. You can choose your line, and then a 180 back again on the other side. Really interesting to see. There are always incidents there, including a world championship influencing incident a long time ago now between Van Aert and Van der Poel. But yeah, Zolder, it's always a good race. This year, it isn't a World Cup.
I know, it's going to change the dynamic a little bit, but it is, and everybody is going out for this period. Remember, we've got a really packed period between the run into Christmas, over Christmas and into New Year, and there's race after race after race after race, and people are going to want to get the racing in because they don't know when it's going to stop post-Christmas. Mm. So everybody is trying to get the results and get the racing in. I think that shot, you know, I mean, there's bound to be a cable cam involved somewhere around there. If you're new to the show, Neil's top 10 cable cam views ever come up every year. This year he's going to be struggling for 10, but, you know, I'm sure he's already got them noted in his little black book. It's a great shot.
I've got a new one,
camera,
actually, already.
Oh, no. I don't need to know. You need to get out more. Never mind me. So there's a great shot of the pack coming along the motor racing circuit, and it's usually a pack to start off with, and then as the race goes on, it sort of comes down and it comes down and it comes down. But I love that shot. I mean, for me, you've got this clash of these two sports of motor racing and with cross all on the same venue, and for me that is brilliant. And I must admit, I'm probably a little nostalgic. It reminds me of being in Mallory for one of our national trophies, where we had a very similar shot, just a lot colder, a lot wetter, and as Neil says, probably a bit closer to this year because there was no crowds there either.
Yeah. Well, these circuits, some of them work out really well. I mean, I'm really disappointed that Spa hasn't stayed. You know, that was a... if we're being nostalgic about cross courses that we no longer have, Spa, which is incredible on its the elevation changes there. But yeah, you know, that was another course with crazy run ups, crazy descents on totally unsuitable surfaces. And in fact, I think Bruce Dalton has raced at Spa, and so he would have, I'm sure we can ask him about that at some point. Anyway, we've got plenty else to talk about this season, because we're not doing that many shows.
Unintended consequence on the way through. We do have less shows coming through, but there's less racing, and let's face it, cancellation of the National Series in the UK, cancellation of the national championships in the UK. We've got the States, basically forget it, not going to get any racing there. Limited racing on the continent in Europe.
Yeah,
no racing that I know of in Australasia or similar.
And I mean, in this Christmas period, the cursed period, and if you hear that, that's this period. Yeah, the one that I miss the most is Degham, which is the night race in the centre of a city. It's just off the centre of the city, but it's the crazy race in some respects, but it always makes for great racing, and the night and the floodlights make it something really special. But yeah, that was going to be a World Cup this year, And of course that had to be cancelled for
I could say something here. Very controversial and say I'm glad that's not a World Cup this year, because I think it's a great night race, I think it's a great event, but a bit like the Rafa Supercrosses, it has its place and that's not a World Cup.
I think it's that's a
not
yeah, I
for
think,
me well, that, it's not that formal fix. It's a bit like the difference between a national trophy and a Rafa. You've got clean racing to produce a pure result, and you've got fun, entertaining, out there racing. And okay, you don't see a tequila shortcut in Degan, probably for good, but you know,
but you do for the crowd.
It's mad enough. It's probably a beer, it's an Amstel shortcut on the way through. However, you know, it is, or you know, a Julepa shortcut. But you know, for me, they are two separate things, and. I have to say, maybe for me that's a bonus.
Well, yeah, I think I would agree with you, but for perhaps different reasons. One of them is, one of the beauties with Degan is it's so open for entries because it's, if as a race anyone can go over and sign up for it. That's if you're a good rider, you could go and have that experience at Degan, which is and there's quite a lot of people do that from all over Europe. And therefore, you will get a good race in this amazing, amazing experience. And of course, when it becomes a World Cup, you can't just sign up and turn up on the start line. The other thing with Degan is the one of the biggest issues with it, in my view, is because of where it is, the pits, which are in two different places. It's one at the top of the course, one at the bottom of the course, which is, I think there was, yeah, some very sad things can happen in that case, but it means, you know, it does advantage those people who have got loads and loads of bikes and loads of pit crew, so you can have a spare bike in the top pit and a spare bike in the bottom pit, and you've got a crew in both places. So yeah, it means if it's muddy, which it is often, it is a course that does mud up, then effectively you're one bike changing, no, you're lap changing, when perhaps your competition could be half lap changing, which perhaps isn't great. Even at World Cup level, you know, the majority of people who are at the World Cup haven't got the luxury of an infinite supply of bikes. I can see the finish line coming up. We do hope that you're all able to have a great time over this Christmas break. You're able to see the people that you need to see, and everyone's dead careful at the same time, as we know that we need to. We're trying to work out when we're going to put the next show out, but we're hoping to get something else out over this period. The other thing we're hoping to put out is we may also be pushing out a few other one-off. We've got a few interviews actually in the bag that we would like to be able to put out for you to hear while you're maybe washing up your Christmas dinner. So there are a few other things, so do listen out for those. So it's been great to catch up with you again, Matt. Hopefully we'll see each other actually rather than through a screen and face to face at some point in the future. Matt, are you doing more Donny Chain Gangs?
Yep, we've got lots more Donny Chain Gangs. We've got Donny Chain Gangs every Tuesday, Thursday. We've got a little bit of a break. There's a women's only special at Christmas. We're going to do an end of the year high as well. So, Neil, get your climbing legs on because you're invited to that one at the end of the year, as is everybody who listens to the Crosscast, of course. No real races for me to go to. So, I'm contenting myself with a bit of Zwifting and a bit of falling off the mountain bike if that's not unusual for me, let's face it. But hopefully everybody has a safe Christmas and has a good New Year and enjoys the racing. And I'm looking forward to watching some and catching up with you soon.
Great. So you can find us on the internet. You can find me at Crosscast Neil, and you can find Bruce at Bruce Dalton CX. Matt, where can we find you?
You can find me on Facebook and on Twitter at Matt Fixer Payne.
And we'll see you on the other side of the tape. Bye.